Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
For Inside Carolina, I'm Taylor Viplis, and you're listening to this podcast, which is a part of the Inside Carolina Podcast Network. On today's episode, I'm joined by my fellow Carolina football lettermen, Mike Ingersoll and EJ Wilson, to talk about Carolina's loss at Pittsburgh. Before we get started, though, I just wanted to say thank you for being here. Be sure you subscribe to Inside Carolina wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube so you never miss out on any of the content the team at IC puts out. The support doesn't go unnoticed on this end. Speaking of support, we want to support the people that support us. So that's why I've got to mention our friends over at Johnny T-Shirt. When it comes to Carolina apparel, they have everything that you could possibly want. They have the T-shirts, the jerseys, the hats, you name it. They probably have it. It's basketball season. So if you're going to be in Chapel Hill now, stop on over at Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street. It's great people, great customer service since it's locally owned and operated by alumni. If you can't get to Chapel Hill, you can visit them online at johnnytshirt.com. And don't forget, Inside Carolina premium subscribers get 10% off their orders. All right, as always, it's Mike Ingersoll and EJ Wilson. Guys, we talked about a win last week, so you know it's only right this week we're talking about a loss. Carolina loses in overtime to Pittsburgh, 30-23. EJ, let's get started with you. What were your biggest takeaways?
Our biggest takeaways, number one, is that I think that we may have this is one of the tougher Carolina defenses that I think that we've had. Maybe it's not showing up by the physicality on the field, but the mental toughness and the mental fortitude of these guys has to be commended. I mean, we've come on here, and of course, we know ourselves. We can be a tad pessimistic sometimes, and definitely the fans on the message boards have noticed that. But I don't want it to be thought that we're ragging on these guys or we don't like what we see. It's just that when you see all these things put together, when all the pieces are there, when the will and the want to are there, when the talent is there, when the coaching and schematically is not there and things aren't being executed, it kind of gets frustrating.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Exactly. Now, isn't that the worst thing a parent could ever say to you? I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
And EJ is their daddy.
Well, let's. I think we'll leave that there. Mike is going from Greek mythology to romance novels over here. So, second takeaway is that I think we're becoming one of those schools that if you hold us under 50, you have a good chance to beat us. I mean, I really don't understand. If you had told me 2 weeks ago from the way some of the defensive performances that we saw that our defense would hold a team scoreless in the second half, one of the top offenses in the ACC scoreless in the second half, and given our chance, our offense a chance to go out there and take the lead with our offense really winning the time of possession battle, and we lose that game, I wouldn't have believed you. But it's like we're kind of finding new ways to win every week. And my third major takeaway is that I'm really excited once again about some of these young guys that we have in our defense. These guys are consistently stepping up. We actually saw some guys winning on pass rushes. We saw guys working moves, working hands. So I was really good to see that. But I'm not as down on this defense as I once was. This, I think, is our best, may not have been a win, but I think is our best performance against some top tier competition. So overall, not too disappointed in what I saw. Definitely would have liked to leave out of there with the win, but maybe we got to start scoring some points now and be the offense. if there was ever an overreaction, that was it. That was just a joke, people.
Mike, what about you? What were your biggest takeaways from Thursday's game?
Penalties killed us on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
Penalties were defense's problem in the first half. They were offense's problem in the second half, particularly in the red zone and the tight red. I mean, we're talking on the 2 yard line, back-to-back possessions. One of them was to win the game. Luckily, we managed to scrape out one of them. We had an offsides penalty. It backed us up to the 7. We managed to get managed to score the touchdown. Sam was able to sneak the ball over the plane of the goal line, you know, by the hair of a lace on that football. He was able to get that touchdown in. The next possession, we weren't so lucky. Had to settle for a field goal. The same thing. We're on a 2-yard line, penalty, backs us up, and we don't really recover from it. Got to kick a field goal. That was the go-ahead drive. Ended up just tying the game as opposed to going ahead to win it. So penalties killed us, so that's situational football. The other major issue is what I've been talking about all year long, and it's in the same vein as what I just mentioned. Short yardage situations, we're terrible. And I don't understand what the problem is. We can't get 2 yards when we need to get it. You know, we were converting when we didn't jump off sides or we didn't do something dumb. We converted more short yardage situations against Pitt than I'd seen previous on a more consistent basis. Once you got out of the first quarter into the second quarter and throughout the rest of the game, when we're in our short yardage situations, the handful, the sprinkling of times we had those opportunities, we converted them when we were on schedule and we didn't do dumb things, but we had so many penalties in those situations too, that it's almost a wash. So the good things we did in short yardage were negated by dumb things we did, like penalties. They have nothing to do with handing the ball off, have nothing to do with executing the play call. It's all just concentration. And doing what you're supposed to do pre-snap. And we failed in that regard. And we failed in the biggest situations back-to-back at the end of that game, in that game. Luckily, we came away with a touchdown, like I said, in one of those situations. And the other, we didn't. And we should have. And it should have been a win. And we should have never had to play for overtime to begin with. And that comes down to penalties. So my takeaways are, we've got a – this late in the season, you can't be having stuff like that. I said in the post-game thing with Ross – look, Carolina's playing in front of 1,700 people up there in Pittsburgh. Like, they're not playing in front of – that's not Florida. Valley. That's not Death Valley. It's not Florida State when it's bumping. It's certainly not Lane Stadium. Like, it's like, for real, like 2,000 people. Like, and they've got other stuff they're going to go do. Like, they've got a city to go party in afterwards. Like, they're not really there because they want to be there. They're there because there's nothing else to do. Okay, that's a Pittsburgh college football crowd. That should not have created – the types of problems we saw in terms of pre-snap penalties, but for whatever reason it did. And we didn't handle the moment well. So, you know, penalties, mental errors, not being able to handle the lights, that's one problem. Takeaway number two is short yardage is still an issue, and it's going to continue to be an issue for the next couple weeks, obviously. I mean, you may see some issues crop up against Wofford, definitely going to see them crop up against State. Hopefully, you know, they don't bite us the way they bit us against Pitt, and we come out of the season with, you know, two more wins.
Yeah, Carolina had 12 penalties for just over 100 yards, I think, just way too many. And that kind of ties into my biggest takeaway from this game, where it's like you see the effort and you see the fight from this team. And now it's on the coaches to try to figure out how they can get this team to play four quarters of disciplined football, where it doesn't seem like they start a game sleepwalking. We've seen it at times last year against Virginia Tech. This year against Pittsburgh, where the team just comes out so flat, and
Georgia Tech, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly. Even the Wake Forest game to a certain extent last year and this year, where the team finds itself in, you know, they're down 17 before we even know what's happening. And it's putting a lot of pressure on your offense to try to catch up. It's putting a lot of pressure on your defense that has already been kind of shaky. And I thought, my other biggest takeaway is that the defensive effort we saw on Thursday, that was an effort to be really proud of from a group where we've talked about it before, where it felt like you couldn't trust them to get any stops. They're holding the number one scoring offense in the country. Kenny Pickett and the Panthers were averaging like 45 points per game. For them to shut out Pittsburgh in the third and the fourth quarter, like EJ was saying, I don't think anybody saw that coming. And if you saw that coming, you probably bet on it. And you're doing a lot better than any of us right here, probably retiring on those winnings. But those are my biggest takeaways, where this is on the coaches to try to figure out how to get this team ready to play under the lights, where I think they're now either 1-7 or 1-8 in night road games, where it's the team, you almost don't recognize them from their home selves and their away selves to start the games, or offensively or defensively. And it always feels like it has to be one or the other, where the defense played really well for the majority of that game, but it was the offense that was kind of struggling early, and the offense was putting the defense in a lot of bad positions early, but they started to figure it out. But by that time it was a little too late, and they even had a chance to win the game, I guess, at the end. But EJ, the story of the game for everybody is the defense. When you shut out Kenny Pickett and Pitt in the second half, everybody's kind of talking about it and trying to figure out, you know, this kind of goes back to the point, like, how close is the defense when they can have performances like this? They must be pretty close. What do you think changed after that first quarter that allowed the defense to make it look like they knew what they were doing and they were going out there and executing?
I think we saw a lot of what we were seeing when our defense is getting after people, and it's stunts up front, it's pass rush games, and like Mike was always saying, that's one of the things that our offensive line was struggling with at the beginning of the year and have picked up. I mean, that's something that's tough for most college offensive linemen. I mean, unless you
go with it early, we struggled with it in the first half against Pitt too again. But oh, wow. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, just another thing from the past coming back to sweeten the deal. But it's a tough situation, and that's the reason why those happen. I mean, a lot of people look at pass rush games as an attempt to rush the passer, but no, those games are just as effective in the run game, disturbing gaps. For offensive linemen, a lot of their assignment is not necessarily an area, but a guy. I mean, and if you're switching these guys, that can be confusing for a guy for offensive lineman who's younger or hasn't really had a lot of reps doing that. So I think that really changed things for us. And with some of our, it allows us to kind of play to our strength on defense up front, which is the athleticism of some of our big guys up there. And I mean, even down to Ray Vohasic, all of our guys can move around. And I think that caused a lot of things that, one, they weren't really used to seeing on film. And I don't think really Pitts has saw a lot of this season. And we really had a chance to confuse them. I mean, yeah, we gave up a lot of yardage, but we were able to stop them. We did a lot of bending and not breaking. And honestly, that's really what I like to see from a defense. I mean, you can't ask guys to go out there and be an Alabama defense and just shut guys out, hold them to 100 total yards for a game. I mean, in today's college football landscape, especially playing against the number one offense, one of the top offenses in the country, you're going to give up some yardage. You're going to give up some plays. They're going to have some success. They're on scholarship just like our guys are. But to hold them out of the end zone for the second half after it looked like it was going to be another onslaught was just amazing to me. And let's not get it confused. I think our defense played well the whole game. It wasn't just the second half. We were put in some very tough situations in the beginning of the game.
Offense didn't help you in the first half.
Oh,
when you're punting from the 1 yard line, it's never going to go good for the defense.
Things have gone awry if you're punting from the 1 yard line, especially after your first drive. I mean, that was one of those things where I kind of just scratched my head and said, well, looks like this is going to be another game and another exercise in futility, and we're going to show how bad we can be. But I mean, I think the defense really held on long enough, and definitely did, I think, more than enough to win that game. I think the only thing that defense really could have done more of maybe is score points. I mean, we got a turnover. We evened up the turnover margin. Maybe score some points, but I don't think it's fair for us to go out to expect or ask this defensive unit that we have right now to go out and score points. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a defensive job. I mean, the 0-1 Raiders, I mean, the Giants back in the day, those are some teams. I mean, 0-1 Ravens, those are some teams where they could count on their defensive score, but they also had Hall of Famers on that defense. I mean, we have some pretty good players, but not guys that we think are going to go out there and get six. I mean, Dre Bly and Julius Peppers aren't out there. We don't have superhumans out there. Do we have top-notch athletes and players I'm excited about in our offense? I mean, on our defense, yeah, I do, but I think that we did about as good as we can be expected to be at this point of the season. 10 games into the season, based on the performances and us knowing who this defense is, that's about as good as I think we can expect them to perform now. But it still sounds like doom and gloom, but I really am encouraged by what I saw. I mean, I wish we could have saw this a few games ago, some of these performances, and I think our record and our outlook on the rest of the season would have been a little bit different. But I do think we're in a position to finish this season strong. If we can get a similar type defensive performance against Wofford, which we damn well should, and the same type of performance against that school in Raleigh, I think we can have a good chance of playing in a bowl game in Boston at 11 o'clock on a Wednesday morning like we were just talking about. But But overall, I mean, other than that, I mean, I just think that the guys did a good job of preparing for this game. It was a short turnaround on that week, but we really looked prepared out there. Yeah, we still missed some tackles and made some mistakes, and we're looking at the ball go over our head, but we didn't let those mistakes kill us, and we showed a lot of mental fortitude. So my hat's off to the defensive performers.
I would sign up right now for a football game in a baseball stadium. So give me either the Pinstripe Bowl in the Bronx or give me the Fenway Bowl in Boston. But the defense, they gave the offense a chance to win this game. And if you would have told me that before Wednesday, I would have assumed you were talking about, you know, maybe the defense held Kenny Pickett to 45 points instead of 23 at the end of regulation. So all things considered, the defense did their job 10 times over. And it was, like I mentioned in my takeaways, I think a lot of fans can be proud of what this defense did, especially with what we've seen from them already this year, where they gave up. We've mentioned it before. They've given up team highs to almost every team they played against, and against the best offense they're going to play all year, they had their best performance, where it looks like the later the season goes on, from the fourth quarter on at Wake, it seems like something changed with this defense, where all of a sudden they understand what they're doing. They still have their times where they have coverage lapses and they have difficulty lining up. But I mean, that's college football. Like nobody outside of Georgia right now is lining up with perfection and executing on every down and distance. But
well, Pitt only put together one drive. If you really think about it, they only put together one drive when they had to put together a drive, you know, and march down the field and score a touchdown. They only did that once. It was their first possession.
Yeah.
The rest of the game, they didn't have, like EJ pointed out, the offense, didn't put them in a good situation at all in the first half after that opening possession. So that Pitt was operating on a short field, and you would hope that potential number one quarterback taken, top offense in the ACC, you know, you'd think that team could probably punch a couple in the end zone from a short field, but they only actually put together one drive. So our defense really, if you, like EJ mentioned, if you look at this in the grand scheme of it, holistically throughout the whole game, that was a very good defensive performance on the whole. And I don't think it's getting the credit that it deserves. So that game, this, like the Georgia Tech game, and frankly, the Virginia Tech game, this game is on the offense. And for the last 2 years, I never thought I'd say that more than once in a season, that our offense is what screwed us in this game.
Especially when you have somebody like Sam Howell at quarterback. Yeah. But Mike, the offense, they really struggled out of the gate. It looked like the offensive line was having a rough go of it early, where there was really no running lanes in the run game, and Sam Howell was just not getting enough time to throw the ball. Pitt might have had 5 sacks in the first half. What were you seeing up front that was causing some of this problem? Was it the usual suspects of issues?
It was. I mean, broken record. My response is broken record. Next question. Yeah, we were losing individual battles, mostly at the tackle spot and pass protection, but you know, we were losing them on the inside too. And then I was actually sitting at Oldie's Tap Room, the Old Tobacco Road, for the first half, watching it with a buddy of mine who does not understand football nearly to the extent that this brain trust here does. And I was explaining to him using oranges and limes on how twist games work right there at the bar, after we gave up a major sack to a very basic twist that was the direct result of the left tackle not setting vertical on a wide 3 technique, which is the most obvious, you know, set vertical on a 3 technique, which makes me wonder if they're being taught it. And I don't know what's being taught in that meeting room, and I'm not going to accuse anybody of not teaching it, because I don't know if it's an execution lapse or if it's a fundamentals lapse. The culprits of those would obviously be different. So I don't know what the source of that problem is. I just know that it is a problem and it has yet to be corrected. Our tackles are not doing a good job of consistently, outside of Josh Azudu, who does it perfectly when he's at the tackle spot. Our tackles don't do a good job of setting vertically on 3 techniques in obvious twist situations. Our guards in obvious twist situations don't do a good job of covering up those 3 techniques, and our tackles and guards together do a very bad job of passing those twists off. Our guards don't bump our tackles well. Our tackles aren't typically vertically setting enough in order to be bumped. So they have some blame in this too. There's a major technique lapse. And what you're seeing is it's getting Sam hit a lot, and it's bumping us out of field goal range, and it's making us have to punt from the 1 yard line. And I'll say the near safety was not the result of a twist. That was just a green dog from the linebacker. It was a perfectly drawn up green dog. So that wasn't a twist situation, but we had later on in the first half, I think two separate times Sam was sacked for a major loss because of a blown twist. These are things that we cannot have happen in the future. We're at the end of the season now, so I'm not even talking about for the rest of the year. Can't have it happen in the future. It must get corrected. The new offensive line that's going to be rolling in next season, there should be an absolute focus in the offseason on how to fix twist games, improve your comfort level and your cohesiveness with one another so that we don't see this problem next year with whoever the quarterback is next year. But what I do know is that the first half looked terrible. The second half, from an individual matchup standpoint, from a twist standpoint, looked substantially different. They cleaned it up. The pocket was clean for the most part. Sam had time to throw for the most part. And you saw the benefits of that. The offense started clicking. We started putting some drives together. We sputtered in certain moments, but you know, we were able to throw together big plays. This is a big play offense. I mean, we moved the ball in chunks, and we were able to get those chunks. Antoine Green, 2 touchdowns, wide open for a touchdown. He okey-doked the dude off the line. Pittsburgh has the worst field in the NFL. Thanks to the Panthers getting turf, they now have the official worst field in the NFL. So he okey-doked that dude off the line. The dude had bad footing. He fell. Antoine Green's wide open, touchdown. Next touchdown he has, gets his helmet blown off, maintains the catch. Concentration, that's a kid, Taylor, I know you're probably going to talk about. His concentration has just – it's night and day from what it used to be. He's a totally different player. And that's a confidence thing. That's a reps thing. So I'm glad to see that from him. And he's producing finally. He's a big play guy. Three catches for 100-plus yards and 2 touchdowns. Antoine Green is – every single time he has a big game, it's only for like a couple catches and a couple 100 yards and a couple touchdowns. Like we keep saying, that's every time for the last 2 years, he's had a big game. That's been it. But anyway, not to get off the O-line here. The point is the offensive line being able to protect and give Sam that pocket. And win in one-on-one situations, which was the other problem from the first half. One-on-one, me versus EJ, one-on-one. As an offensive lineman, I got to be able to win that. As a tackle, I got to be able to win that. If we're going to drop back 60 times in a game, a guy like EJ, right, a draft pick, all right, a draft pick defensive end is going to get me, all right, a handful of times. But he can't get me if we drop back 60 times. He can't get me 10. He can get home 5, and he's expected to. He's expected to beat me 5 times. He should if he's going to the league, right? Pittsburgh has a couple guys that have some next-level talent. But they were winning at a higher clip in the first half. In the second half, that ratio flipped. And now we are more consistent in our one-on-one battles on the outside at our tackle spot. We are more consistent one-on-one battles on the inside. And obviously the twist games got cleaned up. All of that created a cleaner pocket. It gave Sam, allowed Sam to be more comfortable to step into throws, to make big plays. And then we saw the chunk plays getting us down towards the red zone. We were able to score some points, field goals, touchdowns. And then, like I talked about, when we opened this podcast, the mental errors were ultimately what killed us on the offensive side of the ball in the second half. But the offensive production, though not lights out fireworks like it's been before, the offensive production was there enough to win this football game. We just, when we absolutely had to have it, we made dumb mental errors.
You mentioned the offensive line for next year. And theoretically, it is an offensive line where everybody could come back. I guess you have somebody like Josh Azudu who could test his pro potential as a junior. You have some grad students who could decide they want to move on, and they've kind of had enough with football or the Carolina football experience. But you also have incoming Zach Rice, who's 5-star. The number 9 player in the country, the number 1 offensive tackle. I just wanted to get your opinion as an
You got a guy, Diego Pounds, sitting on the bench too right now. You know, assume he'll make a leap in development at some point.
As an offensive lineman, how, when you're looking at, not looking at like Zach Rice specifically, because I don't think any of us have really watched him super closely, but as an offensive lineman in general, how tough would you say it is to play day one once you get on campus and step into an offensive line?
Zach Rice isn't going to be able to play college football. I mean, he could have gone to Alabama. He could have come here. It doesn't matter where he's going to go. He's not going to be ready to play college football. Now, whether he's out there is a different story. You know, there are things that transpire over the course of a training camp and an offseason, and promises made in recruiting that sometimes get guys thrown onto the field quicker than they should be. I don't know if any of that's taken place here. What I can tell you is that from a development standpoint, I have seen almost no offensive lineman ever be fully ready to play college football day one. You need time to develop. John Cooper was a great football player for Carolina. He's a great person. He was a great football player. And he was a great teammate. And I loved playing alongside John Cooper. You could count on him. He was reliable. And he was a heck of an athlete. And it showed. I mean, his, you know, where he was drafted, what, was number 7 overall. I mean, he was a player. His number is up in the Ring of Honor in the stadium, consensus All-American. Cooper could play. When he came from Hoggard High School, he wasn't ready to play. There's a reason he redshirted. Okay. So even a guy who's that decorated, Landon Turner, All-American, great player for us, redshirted.
Garrett Reynolds
played. Now you want to see that. You want to see what happens when you do get thrown in the fire. Garrett will tell you this was not ready to play. Elvis Dumervil snatched his soul out of his body and threw it on the ground and pooped on it. That's what happened in that Louisville game. Now, luckily, I was in high school. I didn't have to live that. But Garrett's freshman year in 05, EJ was there. EJ was at that. EJ traveled to that Louisville game. He'll tell you. Okay. And that's – Garrett Reynolds is a guy who turned out to be another great player for Carolina, had a long NFL career, was a drafted player. Made me a better player as his backup for a couple years. Okay. That is proof that offensive lineman, when you come in, there is just a major learning curve. Some of it's physical, it's strength. Okay. But there's a lot, unlike most positions, there is a technique component to offensive line. I'll equate it to this. You wouldn't walk into a dojo and start rolling with guys from day one. They're not going to let you because you don't know. You have no idea from a hand-to-hand combat standpoint. You have no idea what you're supposed to be doing there, and you're going to get rocked.
That's what
there is. That is what offensive defensive line play is. It is hand-to-hand combat, and the offensive line is defensive line. Obviously, tons of technique work involved, but there's also just some natural athleticism that can get you by. Natural athleticism doesn't typically get you by on the offensive line. Natural athleticism is what supplements technically sound play. That's what makes you a guy like John Cooper or a guy like Garrett Reynolds. That's what sets you apart. But the fundamentals of offensive line play take more than a year to learn. And you're certainly not going to know them coming out of high school. So, you know, we talk about the offensive line next year. I would be very surprised to see a freshman. Well, let me put it this way. I would be more surprised to see a true freshman starting on our offensive line next year, or even a redshirt freshman starting on our offensive line next year and be super successful. I'd be more surprised to see that than actually see one of them on the offensive line playing. But I still think either scenario is there's not a high likelihood of it happening. I will give one example of somebody who I thought was very advanced. James Hurst was somebody as a true freshman that I thought was a very advanced football player. He had the benefit of his dad played at Alabama. He had great coaching in high school. He had the size and everything. James's technique, from a fundamental standpoint, was much more advanced than any true freshman offensive lineman I ever saw. James obviously turned out to be a very good player, still in the league with the Saints right now. I think he's starting at guard for them. James had his own struggles his freshman year. So again, proof that even when you are somewhat polished as a freshman, there is just a major learning curve on the offensive line that you don't necessarily see at other positions.
Yeah. And the two examples that kind of made me think of two were both Heck brothers whose dad's a offensive line coach, where they come in with great fundamentals, but they both redshirted. Charlie was a little different because he was a converted tight end. So there was always going to be work physically that he had to do, but it's an interesting perspective from you where I think you're right that offensive line is going to be the hardest one to transition from high school to the college level. But EJ, when you're looking at the defense, who, in your opinion, played well on the defensive side of the ball that led to UNC playing the way they did? Because I don't think we've mentioned any anybody specifically yet?
I think I have to go with the guy that we always talk about, and that's Jeremiah. Because, and the reason why I say that is because I think there are a lot of people that were in the right positions and played well, and I think that goes to the leadership that he provides. I mean, he's leading in tackles. He's obviously filling the stat sheet, but I think his impact means a lot more. I mean, yeah, we did see our defense kind of hold on when he was out of the game last week, but I think his leadership and us holding the guys together really kind of stood out in that game. I started out with one of my biggest takeaways being kind of commending these guys for their character, for their willingness, for their the way they play out there on the field, not giving up, having resiliency, having mental fortitude. And that really starts at the top. A chain is only as strong as its weakest link, but the leader in the biggest link and the big dog, and that has to be a big dog to be able to run and be able to step up in these type of situations. And I mean, you can see everything. I didn't see a moment or a drive where we got rattled. I mean, even when we had that short drive, we were backed up, our backs against the wall, we still came out and fought that whole drive. We didn't just roll over and give them that touchdown because they were close. They had to fight, scratch and claw for that. So I really want to commend him. And I mean, I think that it was really a cast of the usual suspects. I mean, a lot of guys had up and down games, but I mean, the impact of Storm Duck being back in that defensive lineup, I mean, it's really, really showing. I mean, his leadership has been something that we've obviously been missing this whole year. And yeah, like, as I mentioned earlier, we did see some passes go over our head and give up some big plays, but.
Well, he was also a penalty factory, but exactly. some of that is just rust.
Oh, the most of that is rust. And some of this, you could take that from a guy like that.
Some of this I was explaining to the room I was sitting in to some folks that were asking is also, you know, Dre Bly teaches these guys NFL stuff.
Yeah.
And there's old veteran NFL stuff that Dre knew when he played that even just being out of the league for a few years now, like, you know, for a decade or however long it's been now that Dre's been out. But, you know, there has been a monumental shift in offensive and defensive football and what offenses are allowed to get away with, what defenses aren't allowed to get away with, because there's clearly been an emphasis put on offensive football to make it a better fan experience, to make it more exciting. You know, we hear about that all the time, people complaining about changes to defensive rules and things like that make it just so much more offensive friendly. Dre has clearly taught these guys old veteran NFL tricks that in college are just going to get caught because you don't see it. You don't see little jersey tugs, and you don't see little hand swiping and stuff like that. You just don't see that from college players. It's two guys running with each other. One of them catches the ball and the other one doesn't. I mean, that's how college coverage has been for years and years and years. So, you know, Dre has taught these guys little veteran tricks that are just being noticed by refs because they're, as best I can tell, some of them are a little abnormal. They're not abnormal in that they're wrong. They're just abnormal in that you don't see every player, every defensive backfield doing it. So that, you know, they get caught. There's a little spotlight on them. And that's what I think we're seeing happen. I didn't see Storm Duck for some of those penalties do anything that was egregious. I saw it was savvy, which tells me it was taught by a savvy coach and he picked up on it. And then just the refs were just looking for it. And once you get hit with a defensive holding once, or once you get hit with pass interference once for doing something like that, eyes are then going to be on you and it's going to be a recurring issue. And Storm was a penalty factory for that.
Yeah. You're a target the rest of the game. Once one ref catches you holding the first time, but Jeremiah Gimmel, he led the team in tackles, 10 tackles. He had a sack, a tackle for a loss. The big interception at the end of the game where, it was a result of Geo Biggers being in the right spot, and Geo Biggers runs the tip drill to perfection to allow Jeremiah Gimmel to come up with a good play. Both of those guys graded out fairly well on Pro Football Focus. Jeremiah Gimmel actually led the team in a tackling grade with 83.8. He had 9 tackles, no missed tackles. It was just a pretty solid defensive performance all around when you're looking at the advanced numbers. And another player that graded out in his limited snaps. Now it was both a case where I think he was hurt at times, and also schematically they were taking the nickel out, but Jaquarius Conley, he graded out at a 74.7. And the one play that I think of when you think of Jaquarius Conley from that game, it's the 3rd and 11 where the running back sneaks out of the backfield to go out for a route, and Conley absolutely plants him into the ground, where that running back might still be in Heinz Field right now in the ground trying to get dug out of the field. But EJ,
I also want to shout out Cedric Gray as well, too. I mean, that kid has really, really come along from a guy who really wasn't in the lineup at the beginning of the year to coming in. I think who stepped in for Asante, who I don't think was kind of ready for that position. But, I mean, he's consistently at the top of the stat sheet, not only with tackles, but with his with pass defenses as well as quarterback sacks and quarterback hurries. So, really excited about him kind of carrying over that great linebacker legacy we've had in our defense over the last few years.
When you have players like Gray and like Conley roaming around the middle of the field and knowing that, you know, if you're a receiver, you could get absolutely, you know, decapitated across the middle of the field if you're not careful. What does that kind of do for a defense, EJ?
Oh, it's everything that you want to have. I mean, once we got that on our defense when we were playing, it really changed the game. When you have Bruce Carter, Quan Sturdivant, and then you have Deontay Williams coming over the top, and Denoris Searcy, who, by the way, gave me a concussion. So he doesn't anybody can get it when it comes to physicality with Searcy, and another great guy, one of my best teammates I've ever had. But I mean, it's a big change, because when teams can't go in the middle of that defense, when they can't throw over the middle, when they can't run the ball up the middle, that's when you start getting into your athletes on the outside. And with the two guys we have out there, Tony Grimes, Storm Duck, and some of the other guys we have backing them up, it's a big change to the defense, because then you can't, once you try the perimeter of our defense and try the athleticism, that's really the strength. We have a sideline to sideline defense with everybody that we have. I don't think we have a weak link when it comes to athleticism on that defense. So it's really a game changer. And I mean, that's just talking schematically. When you want to talk about just attitude and just what I think is 20% of what's going to get a defensive win, it's going out there, setting the tone, and setting the tempo, with saying, hey, this is the middle of the defense, it's the heart of our defense. If we're going to protect anything, that's what we're going to protect. As a defensive player, especially as a linebacker and a safety, you don't want to let anything get directly in front of you. You don't want to let anything get behind you. The only chance of probability is sideline to sideline, attacking the edges of the defense if things are being done right in the middle. And I have nothing but confidence in that part of our defense. So I think as that starts to evolve, as guys like Giovanni Biggers and some of those other guys who've really been coming along this season start to advance, and especially with the play of Cedric Gray and getting Power Echols in the lineup. And I know we're talking a lot about future, but it's two games left. I mean, guys, let's talk about the future of this program. With those guys coming in and with Jaquarius being back there as well, I really think we're going to see a much improved defense. I know this is something that we've said every year, but I really do think that from what we've seen over the last few games, this defense is starting to turn the corner. And you're right, it does start with some of the play that we're getting right in the heart in the middle of that defense.
EJ, Taylor brought up a question earlier to shift gears a little bit, but maybe not too much. He brought up a point earlier that we just look like a totally different team night games on the road. Mm-hmm. And you and I had that problem. Our program, our version of this program, had that problem too, where we hadn't won a game outside the state of North Carolina. And I don't want to say it was 10 years, but it was a long time until that Rutgers win on Thursday night up in Piscataway. That was the first game outside the state of North Carolina, road game, that we had won in God knows how long. That we finally got that monkey off of our back. What, in your opinion, from a player's psychology standpoint, because I've thought about this and I've never come up with a good answer. From a player's psychology standpoint, what is it about road games versus home games that makes things so much different? I mean, there's the obvious, well, you're comfortable on your home, you know, on your home field, and you're comfortable, you know, you don't have to travel and things like that. But like, we didn't practice on the game field very frequently. It wasn't like we were in Keenan Stadium a lot. The traveling, we're sleeping in a hotel versus sleeping in a dorm or an apartment. You know, like, we're not at home with our parents back wherever, you know, whatever city we're from. You know what I'm saying?
It might
like
be it's an not, upgrade hotel life.
Hotel is actually, many times it's an upgrade. Mm-hmm. You got better food, you got things like that. But, you know, it's not that there's not, the travel never took a lot out of me. I didn't feel like road performances were any different than home performances from that standpoint. And then, like I said, from a familiarity standpoint with the field, that really wasn't an issue either. Because we'd played on turf, we'd played on grass, and really that's the only difference is the surface. So in your mind, what is the psychology behind road struggles? And like for us, like night road struggles, compared against like what we experienced when we played, which was we hadn't won a game outside the state of North Carolina in what felt like forever.
Well, for me, it's something where I really tried to make, I really tried to stop differentiating my travel schedule and my habits on the road versus my habits at home. So I tried to versus on home games. So not many people know that we actually stayed in the hotel when we had home games as well. So I would try to set my days up exactly the same. So if we had a 12 o'clock game at home versus a 12 o'clock game on the road, I tried to set up the same thing. I didn't allow myself those creature comforts for those home games. I would set my bags up the same way. I would leave my home approaching for a home game, approaching it just like I'm going on the road and I won't be back for the next couple of days. And if I leave, something is there. It's just kind of going through those mental gymnastics to put yourself in a place to say, okay, no matter what stadium we're playing in, that this is where I need to be at a certain point in time coming into game day. This is where I need to be reading. This is the point where I know I need to be looking at my plays. This is the point where I know I need to put that away and focus on and start going through the mental gymnastics. If I'm in this situation, I'm going to do this. Start thinking about my pass rush move. Start thinking about my pad level. Start thinking about all those other things. And like, and Mike will tell you, like, he and I had the pleasure of going against each other pregame a lot, and we'll tell you we had a routine we did every week. We did one play hard, we did the second half speed, and the third play we basically just stood up and touched shoulder pads. I mean, and that's, we did that every week, not because we were trying to give each other a break, but that was the routine of that we kind of knew. We said, okay, we can come out here, we can get this adrenaline out, and now we can start focusing on our steps. We can focus on our steps and fitting up on this next one, because I mean, we're starters. I mean, we're not trying to win a rep in pregame or anything like that. We're trying to get our steps right. I mean, we're not going to make a tackle here. So I think doing all of those things is really setting yourself up for success. And that's something that you had to learn. That's something I didn't really start learning until, I'll say, the end of my junior season, and that I carried over to my senior season, even to the point that where I had the same routine on from Thursday through Saturday, to the end of the game. So I really think it's just muscle memory, is getting in that repetitive state. It's just doing the same things over and over again. I mean, even Michael tell you, like, some of those veteran guys in the NFL, some of their game day routines are crazy, but it's just something that they may have done when they had a really good game, and it's something that they can mimic at home and on the road. So I think that's really the big thing, is like you said, we're not practicing in our stadium on our game field. We're practicing on practice field, and every stadium's going to have its own unique challenge. So I don't think it's anything as minute as that. I really think it's just the mental state that we are going into that game. It can be a little bit different on the road versus
that. Yeah. For me, I mean, it looks like, honestly, it boils down to a lot of coincidence. You know, everyone wants to look for a common thread, which is what my question was. If you'd ever seen a common thread between, you know, struggles on the road, or even more specifically, more granularly, night games on the road versus, you know, your success at home. And we are a totally different team at home, it feels like, than it is night games on the road this season. Oh, yeah. And we, like I mentioned, we had our own struggles in our own program, but for me, it's, I honestly think, because all those things are true, and it was hammered into our brains that, like, we do that, like, keep your routine the same. We stayed in the same hotel. It was always a Marriott. You know, we always had the same food. You know, we took the same bus lines, you know, we flew on the same plane. Everything was the same all the time. Nothing was ever different. So for me, frankly, I think it's just a lot of coincidence. There is not a common thread all the time between struggles on the road versus success at home, and why there's that discrepancy. I think really it's just, you know, stuff happens, and for whatever reason, there's just a very odd coincidence. But it's one of those, like, you know, correlation is not causation kind of things.
Yeah, road night games too. I think it's easier for more fans of the other team to kind of get behind their team and support their team. And it's something that you kind of have to get used to, going into another stadium. And, you know, you have fans that aren't cheering for you and they're not rooting for you. And the other side of that is the other team kind of feeds off those fans. And it's something that you kind of have to adjust to as a college football player. One story I could think of quickly was from the 2015 team, where we were beating up everybody so badly, and we didn't struggle on the road. We didn't struggle at home, but we went to NC State to close the year. And at that time, I think we were 10-1, and we're in the tunnel at Carter Finley. This is why I really don't go back to Carter Finley if I really don't have to. We're in the tunnel at Carter Finley, and a water bottle comes flying down, and like a water bottle hits somebody on the team, and like Like it's going everywhere. And we like looked down at the bottle and it was like, it was clearly pee in the bottle. So like people are just like throwing stuff at us. And we went back in the locker room and like the talk on the team was like, we are going to ruin every fan's day here and play like we're pissed off and just embarrass this team. And by the end of the first quarter, I know the final score was a lot closer than what the game said, but like after the first quarter, it was 35-7. And like you could tell NC State knew they had no business being in that game. And it was just a case of we went into that game knowing that there was going to be, you know, I don't know how many people Carter Finley fits, but we knew everybody in that stadium was going to be rooting against us, except for the small section of our parents and our friends and family that came to the game. But I think playing on the road and is just kind of getting used to being the team that nobody wants to see win. And the other story that I had that I wanted to mention quick, when we were talking about the Jaquarius Conley being able to absolutely level somebody across the middle of the field. When you have somebody like that who puts fear in receivers, like you need as many of those as possible. I remember, I think it was my first year on the team in 2013. We had Kareem Martin, who was in that like hybrid, like linebacker DN type role. And
Kareem turned out to be a player, man. Oh my God. I mean, Kareem would be mad at me for saying this, but when he was a true freshman, I didn't see that progression happening. It turned out, but again, there's proof. True freshman, you never know what they're going to be because there's a learning curve on
finest, man.
Yeah, but on the offensive and defensive line, there's a huge learning curve. Kareem Martin, another good example.
And I think in one practice, I had like a slant route, and I'm going across the slant. I'm kind of confident that I'm open. And at the last second, I see Kareem from the defensive end spot drop back into coverage. And like, I just got alligator arms. Like my arms are like crawling back into my body, and he just hits me and rolls over the top of me. And I remember like just getting up, like the defense was fired up. And I just remember getting up, like, do I really love football? Cause I don't think I do. When you have guys football. Like that in the middle
do
of
love,
your defense,
do you love football? John Bunning, do you love football?
When you have guys on defense that make the offensive players question how much they love football, I think that's what you see with Jaquarius Conley from this game. And the last year's game against Miami, I remember he had a couple of big hits in the backfield. But Mike, from the Pittsburgh game, Mac Brown in his post-game press conference, he said that he wishes that he went for it on the fourth and two instead of kicking the field goal and playing for overtime. What was your take kind of in the moment and with not playing the result, but what were you thinking at the time?
I mean, so we went for a fourth down, fourth quarter, I think it was fourth and short. We're in the green zone. So we were like 35 yard line, I think, fourth and short. And we run, it was either a wheel or it was just a go. I can't remember what it was, a nine route, I think, to Justin Olsen. We take a shot into the end zone. We needed like a yard. It wasn't even a full 2 yards. It was like a yard and a half. Mm-hmm. We took a shot at Justin Olsen. You know, God bless Justin Olsen, but like Josh Downs, Antoine Green already had 2 touchdowns at that point, 100 yards receiving. You know, why was that the primary read? Like, why was that the call? So do I think we should have gone for it on fourth down there and chased points? Not if that was the way we were going to approach fourth downs. I'm serious. I mean, and no disrespect to Justin Olsen. Like, he's coming along. He's getting better. But we have established guys who have produced in the past, Josh Downs. We know we're reliable, Josh Downs. And guys who have produced literally that game, Antoine Green. And you've got guys like Kamari Morales, who for the most part is a reliable receiver. Mm-hmm. You got this Nesbitt kid. I didn't even see him touch the field on Thursday at the tight end spot. And we've got some players who can play, you know, and obviously, and then you've got Ty Chandler, who we are still not using in the passing game, despite thinking 4 weeks ago that we were going to start using him. So we have a lot of options, and our choice in that situation, in a gotta have it situation, was to take a shot from 30 plus yards out at a touchdown to an unproven player who, again, I think is getting better when you have other options at your disposal. No, man. Like, we're going to get cued on fourth down there. We have no. My personal opinion is just go ahead and take those points there. I'm also not a fan of chasing points. So, you know, we chased points earlier, and this is the analytics thing. We chased points earlier in the game.
Two-point conversion.
On the two-point conversion, and had we not done that and just kicked the extra point, we would have had a one-point lead at the end of that game. Mm-hmm. And then we're taking a knee. You know, we're not looking to score touchdowns. You know, we have a one-point lead. Everything else considered, we have a one-point lead at the end of that game. And then we just got to stop. We got to stop Kenny Pickett and them on that last drive, and we're done. So I'm not a fan of chasing points. I never have been. I'm not an analytics guy. I think Moneyball was an entertaining movie, and it's a terrible idea in practice. But, you know, kudos to Brad Pitt. You know, he managed to change an entire entire sports industry across all sports.
Yeah, if you had more confidence in your short yardage scenarios, I think you definitely go for it. But kicking the field goal there, you had been outplaying Pittsburgh for the better part of three quarters. So it's like,
which is what makes me think maybe we should have gone for it. But, you know, at the same time, it's like then we went for it, and what I was presented with when we were going to take that risk. The risk that I was presented with, the response to that risk was taking a shot from the green zone to an unproven receiver when all we needed was a yard and a half. Like, I'm sorry, guys. Like, you know, we needed 4.5 feet, and instead we throw the ball 35 yards in the end zone. Like, I can't get behind that.
Yeah, I think you're seeing an offense that this late into the season is still trying to figure out its red zone situations and it's short yard situations when you're playing without somebody like Javonte Williams. Like, if fourth and two, when you have Javonte Williams in the backfield, it's an easy decision. You hand the ball off to him and let him fight for 2 yards. They don't really have somebody like that who can erase some of the offensive line's mistakes, or if the offensive line doesn't have the push, where even somebody like Michael Carter who could erase a lot of those mistakes with his patience and his vision. Carolina doesn't really have anything like that. So I don't have a problem either way with what Carolina decided, as long as it was decisive and there wasn't really any hesitation to what they were going with. I wouldn't have had a problem either way. Always a great time to break out the Philly special. I feel like the Philly special is so overplayed at this point, but anytime I see the Philly special, when the quarterback starts leaking out, I'm like, oh, let's go.
here's the thing. I mean, I agree with you, but part of my issue with like our short yardage situations, our handling of short yardage situations is we do every single thing out of the shotgun. So like a Philly special is just a staple play when you're only going to be out of the shotgun under all circumstances. I don't know that we're incapable of doing it out of the shotgun. I know that it's possible because I've done it in multiple different offenses, and I've seen it done in many, many, many different offenses. But moving the pocket, like changing the launch point, like why are we not – Sam doesn't roll out. I don't think we have a design boot in this offense, and if we do, I haven't ever seen us run it. So we don't there's no boot when you've got – and if Sam's getting killed in the pocket, we're not moving the pocket for him. Okay, we're not going under center ever. And yet, when we go under, the two times we've gone under center this season, we've been successful. We never go under center. We're starting at, so again, let's use the example of down there on the goal line, right? We're fourth and two, all right, down and two, down and one, short yardage. We're snapping the ball 4.5 to 5 yards deep in the shotgun, handing it off at six to get one. So you have to get 7 yards to get 1 yard under that circumstance. Why would you ever do that? I'm not going to question Phil Longo. He gets paid more money to coach than I'll ever get paid because I refuse to be a coach. But what I do see from a player's standpoint is why, if I need to get 1 yard, are you asking me to get six? it just doesn't make any sense to me. If we've got a quarterback getting absolutely destroyed in the pocket because his offensive line can't, you know, can't keep anybody off the ground for some reason, why are we not moving the pocket? Help the offensive line. Help the quarterback. Help the offense in short yardage situations by shortening that mesh point, by shortening that play. It makes the play happen faster, number one. And from a physical distance standpoint, it cuts the play down by 80%. I have a lot of gripes there. So all of that to say, again, like, do you go for it down there? Frankly, I mean, I guess I like your answer about the decisiveness, like just make the decision and go with it. I'm fine with that. I like that from a philosophy standpoint, but also philosophically, no, not when you have to have the game. Do you go for it down there on fourth and short? When you know that every option you have is starting 5 yards deep from 5 yards back from the ball when you only need 1 yard to get ahead. I mean, it makes no sense to me at all.
Just modern football. That and the line fades. I'm so out on goal line fades. It's unbelievable.
I've been out on goal line fades since 2004.
If I could erase two things in football, it would be goal line fades and lining up in shotgun when you need like 1 yard.
I mean, who caught it against Virginia Tech in 2015? Was that Bug? No, that was Quinshad. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's go ahead and just say this now. And look, Quinshad was a great receiver. That play is 50% luck. And the way you're on the 50% success side is if you got a 6'5" receiver who's built like a linebacker, like Quinshad. Okay. And who can jump out of the gym. Like that's how that works. But I mean, I've been off goal line fades forever, and I'm certainly off shotgun down there in the red zone. That'll never make any sense to me.
All right, to end the podcast, as always, it's everybody's favorite segment. Say something nice, EJ. We'll start with you.
Well, this one's easy for me this week, so I just have to really choose the one that I've come. So I'll say, over the last 2 weeks, our defense has shown. Over the last, I'll say, five quarters, our defense has shown some semblance of consistency with being able to stop high-powered offenses. I mean, let's take this for what it is. We played against the two best offenses we're probably going to see this season, and two of the top offenses in the conference and in the country. And for us to be able to go out there, yeah, we gave up that amount of points last week, but when we needed to get stops, we got stops. And that play carried over from that fourth quarter on into the game against Pittsburgh. So I'm very encouraged about what I saw. And it looks like these guys are kind of are paying attention, watching film, having carryover, trying to be a little bit more intentional and consistent about the things that they can control. And that's what it's about on defense, is controlling what you can control, keeping your eyes on your luggage. And I think we're doing a much better job of that. So my say something nice is that our defense has been relatively consistent over the last five quarters.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is the number three scoring offense after this week. They're down from their number one spot because of Carolina holding them. And Wake Forest is up to number two as a scoring offense. Now, Carolina played a helping hand in probably shooting them up a couple of rankings, but they did do a good job in the fourth quarter against them. Mike, what's your say something nice?
From a fundamental standpoint, from an assignment standpoint, our offense as a whole, but particularly our offensive line, made halftime adjustments and came out in the second half against Pitt and played substantially better. Now that is not to mention any of the mental errors that ultimately killed us, that, you know, many of which were the offensive line's fault. But from an assignment standpoint, they made those adjustments. They came out, they looked like a totally different line from a technique standpoint and from a production standpoint in the second half against Pitt. I hope that carries forward the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm going with Mike. You mentioned him earlier. I was saving him for this spot. Anton Green, who over the past three games has 14 catches for 274 yards and four touchdowns. He's taken a ton of pressure off Josh Downs as the number one receiver, has given Sam Howell another option to go to in the offense. And he's not even just another option at this point. He is a great receiver who's making tough contested catches. It's a night and day difference from where he was week one. He's a player who he's going to keep getting better each and every week. He's got great hands. He's got great size. He's got great speed, where when Jason Staples is in this camp too, with me, with Antoine Green, where it's like, when you when you're making a wide receiver in a lab, green is as close to what you want your wide receivers to look like. So when he doesn't have production, it's frustrating from a coaching or an analyst position, because you're like, this guy has everything you need to be a great wide receiver. And with him, I think it was a case of him just needing the confidence. He mentioned it before the season. He mentioned it at times during the season, I'm pretty sure, in press conferences, where, you know, when he got hurt his freshman year, I think at Syracuse, he kind of lost that confidence in himself and in his ability. And what you've seen from him the past three games is a really confident receiver who trusts his ability. And I think he's been one of the brightest spots as this year has kind of closed out. And I think it's going to be interesting for him with a choice to make, where does he come back next year? Cause with last year being a free year for everybody, he theoretically could come back. And when you're breaking in a new quarterback, you want as many experienced wide receivers as possible. I know a lot of Carolina fans are holding out hope that the other Green, who they're recruiting, the receiver, I think a four-star receiver, comes to Carolina to maybe play day one with a new quarterback. You don't want a new quarterback and new receivers. You want, if you have a new quarterback, you want experienced receivers. If you have new receivers, kind of like you had this year, you want an experienced quarterback. So it's nice to have that balance. And I think if you're going into next year with Anton Green and with Josh Downs as your 1-2 punch, that helps out a new quarterback that's getting broken into. And I don't know how Carolina would account for that numbers wise and attrition if somebody like Anton Green decides to come back and kind of needing to open up a spot somewhere. But I think if you're the staff at this point, if Green wants to come back, you take him back based off the production that you've kind of seen. But that concludes the podcast for this week. UNC plays on Saturday against Wofford, who by Wofford by FCS standards is bad. They're the Terriers are coming into Chapel Hill with a 1-9 record, but UNC, the Terriers,
that's cute.
back in Keenan Stadium with the Tar Heels playing to clinch their postseason berth. We'll be back to talk about it. As always, guys, always a pleasure.
See you, man.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.